Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC card with your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and
The Guru, back again after a two-week hiatus. And we've actually got a great card ahead of us. UFC on ESPN 31, UFC Vegas 44. Aldo, Jose Aldo versus Font, Rob Font, a featherweight contender matchup. No, bantamweight. It used to be featherweight because Jose Aldo is the featherweight goat. I mean,
unless you consider Max or Alex, right?
Uh-oh. All right. Well, anywho, here we are, right? Guru's getting carried away.
We got to do that sometimes.
Yeah. What do we got here? What is this, UFC Vegas 44?
It is.
It's UFC Fight Night. We got Font versus Aldo. We're back. I mean, how was your Thanksgiving? I feel like I ate way too much.
I mean, it was good.
I honestly
do a weird thing here. We do a baked ziti here at the house.
I don't know why.
It was fucking delicious, though.
We like saying we're all baked, no ziti.
Easy there, guy.
So here we go. We got this great card after our Thanksgiving break here, and you know, I feel like they actually kind of stacked it in comparison to recent memory. And given that we got 15 fights here, I mean, let's not waste too much time getting right into it, right?
It's definitely a weird hodgepodge of fights, but there's a lot of good stuff here. A lot of it's really exciting. There's a couple that really jump out to me. So you're like you said, let's not even waste any time yet. Let's just get into it.
Yeah, definitely. Kicking off the card, like they always like to do, it seems like we have our exciting opener fight, the Guru special, mind you. So you got Luis De Last Samurai Smoka versus Vince Vendetta Morales. I think Vince Morales wins the nickname battle, if I had to say.
I think so.
Let's get into the fight here. I mean, Morales, he's given up.
I'm always down for a good alliteration.
Yeah, definitely. And I like V for Vendetta also, so that that's also solid.
I never saw that movie.
Oh, what the fuck, bro? All right, so anyways. All right, so we got Luis Smoka. He's got a 2-inch height advantage, but he's actually given up 2 inches of reach, which is a little bit weird here. Vince Morales, they have somewhat similar striking numbers on paper here. I really think where the difference is going to come in this fight is Smolka's experience as a grappler. Where Morales might have a little bit of a wrestling background, I just don't think it's going to be good enough to deal with how slick Smolka is on the mat. And I think Smolka packs a bit of a punch here. I mean, how do you think this fight plays out, Guru?
It's interesting because Vince Morales has the wrestling credentials in his back pocket, but from what we've seen on the tape, his wrestling was, I don't know, it wasn't that great against Draco Rodriguez, who maybe is a better defensive wrestler than we all thought, but you'd think somebody that was a state championship wrestler would, I don't know, just show a little bit more in that respect. He does have some decent striking where that's where I think he'll actually have the advantage versus Smolka. So at the end of the day, all roads for Morales lead back to the takedown. Mm. And when it goes to the ground, I think that's where Smolka is going to end up having the advantage. So I just don't think that it's going to go that well for Vince Morales. I think Smolka could end up getting a sub because, if you look at Luis Smolka's, what is it, his last three wins are four wins. So they're all by finish. Actually, wait. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. His last six wins in a row are all by some sort of finish. I believe his last nine fights in a row have just knocked on the distance in general. So I don't know if this is the spot to be like, let's fade that narrative, but I think the fight just doesn't go the distance. I think maybe that's just the play.
Well, it seems like the most likely thing as far as the fight props go here. So we have the line is Smolka -145 and Morales at +125 on DraftKings. And right now for this fight to go the distance, it's -135. So for it to end inside the distance +100, that's a pretty solid number. And I do think that if anything, I mean, Smolka by submission at +350, given that he averages 2 submission attempts per 15 minutes, and he's actively shown the ability to go for the takedowns, actually showing that, you know, he could really turn the tides. And I mean, he landed 60 strikes when he knocked out Quiñones in the second round, and that was only halfway through the fight. So he was on pretty good pace there. He's shown, you know, the ability to kind of go back and forth in the past. But yeah, I will say it. You know, it could be interesting here if Morales is able to get some control and Smolka can't necessarily get out. I don't envision that happening given the level of wrestlers that Smolka's faced in the past.
Yeah, I honestly, Morales, though, has had the higher level of competition. I mean, I guess it's...
I mean, Smolka, look at this. I mean, Brandon Moreno, Ray Borg, Tim Elliott, Matthias Nicolau.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Matt Schnell.
Sorry. Well,
Casey Kenny.
Wait, chill. I was not considering his first UFC stint. So I guess that's stupid, though, because obviously he's fought them. But I just wasn't considering them at this for this juncture. But I guess you're right. How could you not?
I mean, his takedown defense is garbage, so it's not like he's not going to end up on the mat. I do think that in those positions, he's going to be the one attacking and actually going for stuff and scoring.
And he's also very savvy. Like, I mean, you saw him in his last fight versus Quiñones, versus Quiñones.
Yeah, that's who it was. Yeah.
Yeah, versus Quiñones. Quiñones actually takes him down because, like you said, his takedown defense is dog shit. And he uses the cage to, like, reverse himself out of it and get up. And that's awesome. And you need to be able to do that kind of stuff when you're going to be pushed against the cage often by Vince Morales.
Completely agreed. So right now, realistically, probably would just play...
Under 2.5 at +128.
I'll just play Smolka -145, but not as a big play.
Yeah, I lean the under. That's... and
fair enough.
Just Smolka as a pick, I guess.
Definitely.
Not as a pick.
Let's get to the next one here. We got Alex the Great White Morono versus Hey Mickey Gall.
Hey Mickey, you're so funny. I'm sorry.
Yeah. You should be sorry.
I should be. My voice is very good.
Yeah, yeah. It's all right. Good effort, right? That's what counts. listeners, you can let us know. Yeah. Let's see how many subscribers we lose from that one. No, just kidding. We got Alex Morono giving up 3 inches of height and 2 inches of reach to Mickey Gall, who's shown some improved stand-up in his recent fights, but
which is all the commentary team is going to be talking about.
Oh goodness, yes. So I mean, just to look at specifics here, I mean, Mickey Gall, when you go look at just the Mike Perry fight, you know, first round and all that, I mean, Mickey Gall lands 51 of 97 from distance overall, and Perry lands 51 of 100. I mean, Mike Perry, you know, is always a bit of a solid striker, so to do that and not get knocked out over that period, it's pretty solid for Gall. And then against Jordan Williams, I mean, he basically knocked him out on the feet before getting the submission, but that is Jordan Williams. So how much can we read into Mickey Gall overall? It does look like he's made improvements. But Alex Morono has been on quite the run himself. And when you just look at the requisite numbers, I mean, the striking defense for Morono is really what stands out to me. And I do think that he has a bit of wrestling to go to in his back pocket because Gall has shown that he can be controlled from top. Are you seeing something similar?
Absolutely. One thing that we should make clear is that you cannot and should not break down an Alex Morono fight without mentioning his striking defense. So shout out TB for bringing that up right away, because that is, I think, one of the things that, I mean, that's probably why he's in the UFC, because, I mean, it is far and away the thing that he does best. It's something that really, really stands out on paper and how he fights. the little streak that he's on is 3 out of 4, right? So that's pretty solid. The one loss being to Anthony Pettis. The three wins being Zawada, Cerrone, and Rhys McKee. So, yeah, I just think that Morono is going to have too much for him in the striking department. Like, I don't think Gall is ready for all that. And when he tries to take it to the mat, I think that simply put, that Morono is well-versed enough to handle himself.
Yeah, I think it's pretty simple. Ultimately, the line's probably pretty fair with Morono at -225 and Gall at +185. I think that Mickey Gall does have potential still as a prospect. And, I mean, he still is so young for given how long he's been in the UFC. Only 29 years old still. I mean, he could still make some improvements and show a little bit more. I just don't think he's shown enough for me to take him over Alex Morono in this spot. So I would feel comfortable using Alex Morono as a parlay piece at -225.
Yeah, I think Morono should get the job done, and I think that's probably one way to get the odds down. The other way I was thinking would be Morono in the over 1.5. I don't know that Mickey Gall survives per se, but I do think that he's going to give it a solid 1.5. Like, because then the cardio might fall off a cliff, or you know the wrestling, the mental fatigue starts to set in when you realize your game plan isn't going your way.
Yeah, well, I mean, he did have that round 2 knockout against Diego Sanchez, but I mean, he was sick during Diego's that fight week, and Diego Sanchez, it was like a ground and pound type of deal. So I don't think I'm necessarily worried about Diego's about Mickey Gall's chin. Like, he went to decision with Randy Brown when he was less experienced. He went to decision with Mike Perry, and Mike Perry had to wrestle him. I do like that over 1.5 angle. What's that line at?
-150.
Morono and over 1.5 -150. That's solid. That might be a solo play on its own.
And then the other thought would be, oh yeah, no, that's actually crazy. Yeah, I like that. That's
okay. One. Great. Simple enough. Move it right along. Yep. We have Jared Vandera versus Azamat Mirzakhanov. This fight was put together this week, and
my brother Azamat.
Jared Vandera
is his cousin. I messed that up.
Yeah.
Sorry, boy.
Yeah. Listen, stop messing up the professional, okay? the professional Azamat. So one of the worries I have about this fight, shout out to Dan Tom on the Die Hard podcast this Monday, speaking about how he thought that Mirzakhanov, you know, could potentially end up moving down to middleweight at some point and cutting there. You know, he came in at 205. Now he's fighting a heavyweight fight against Vandera on short notice. This was changed to a heavyweight matchup. This was supposed to be a light heavyweight matchup to start, correct?
That's
with his original opponent.
That would be news to me, and definitely seems to be the case. Wow, that's something that I have overlooked. Yeah, he was supposed to fight Felipe Lins, who's generally a light heavyweight as
he
well.
Was trying back oh. he was trying to move back down to light heavyweight for his last UFC fight,
and Felipe Lins is just gonna end up getting cut. He's had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 fights canceled now.
Yeah, we don't Crown of Combat definitely not fans of Felipe Lins. No. Honestly, I thought he was gonna end up pulling out of the fight when I was looking at his Tapology history. I mean, the dude's pulled out of so many fights, like you just said. Yeah. So it was like, was he even going to make it to the walk? And no, he didn't. So now Vandera's got a 6-inch height advantage and a 9-inch reach advantage. Yeah. So of all the technical skills that I think Mirzakhanov brings to the table, and Guru, I mean, you know, please break that down. But I am worried overall about the size discrepancy.
You know, this is one thing that you should tell any short guy friends that you have, to say to, you know, any chicks that maybe are taller than them. You say, everybody's the same size when they're on the ground. You understand what I'm saying? This guy is going to get it to the ground. It's not if, it's when. We've seen the game plan already cut out. Alexander Romanov, Sergei Spivak. These guys are not necessarily, especially like Sergei, right? Not necessarily bigger than Jared Vandera, but are able to get it to the ground. This guy is more technical, and he has some. He has crazy quick hands. I mean, his boxing, like, that's his skill. Like, he's not a Khabib Russian. He's a boxing Russian. He's a Peter Yan Russian. He's a Peter Yan Russian. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Peter Yan's Muay Thai, but you understand. You're getting my point here. Like, he's got what I think to be elite hand speed. He bounces back and forth on the balls of his feet. Like, he's not just gonna stand there like an open target for Jared to hit. And yes, can this guy get KO'd? Sure. Can I just don't see the narrative. I guess it's possible, right? The whole, oh, he's going to gas out. We haven't seen him because what is he? He's got 9 fights, right? He's 10-0, and he has 8 knockouts. Only 2 fights have went to the distance. So, yeah, I mean, is it safe to assume that third round he might look fairly sketchy? Yeah, I think that's fair.
So my other concern, he was signed in 2017 originally, and then he got immediately suspended for 2 years for anabolic steroids / synthetic testosterone. So this is him. You know, he won his contender series fight to earn his way back into the UFC, but no longer on the juice. And that was straight up proven by USADA, who doesn't catch too many people on the juice.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. And then with the cutting down the weight, all and now at heavyweight, it definitely takes the wind out of my sails a little bit on him. I definitely think that it's a stylistic nightmare for Jared Vandera. That I can tell you. And I guess that's kind of baked into the fact that this guy who's making his debut is the favorite. So, that's where I lean. I guess I won't send it out as a strong play. There's no.
I'd like
props.
To see them.
No props available.
Yeah, I'd like to see them. Yeah, it's not even posted with a line on DraftKings yet. I'd like to see them face off, just because I'd like to confirm that size discrepancy.
Sure, I definitely want to see that too. FanDuel minus -215, Mirzakhanov, and +172 Vandera. Round prop. Over 1.5 -138, under +108.
Yeah, this fight specifically, I'm not touching this one. So shall we move along here? Sure. We have
I lean Azamov.
Yeah, no, and listen, for my pick, I'm picking Azamov. I just I would like to just see like what type of size discrepancy we're talking about before I go in too deep on it. Hey, listen, it might be on our Crown of Combat official plays. Make sure you like and subscribe to our YouTube here. You know, make sure you give us a follow. Click on that link tree. Follow our Bet MMA tips page, because you'll see all of our official plays there. Because, you know, sometimes later in the week, as you get more tape, as you see them face off, as you hear the interviews, and you see how everything's going, you might feel a little bit stronger. I've definitely come around.
And you watch that line movement, public line movement, sharp line movement. Paying attention to that kind of stuff is super important as well.
Speaking of line movement, in our next fight, we got Claudio El Nino Puelles versus Chris Grits Grootsmacher.
The Grits.
The Grits.
The Grits. Puelles.
So Guru's been sitting here practicing to make sure that, you know, we got our names right. I can't tell you how many times he just dropped a, what was that?
Puelles.
Just drops it on me.
Claudio Puelles, man.
I can't keep my composure. Puelles. but yeah, I mean, this fight is going to be entertaining, and it definitely should be. Both of these guys can push a pace. They have the cardio. I just think stylistically, who do I like here?
Puelles, man. And how could you not like Puelles? Puelles is a lucha libre and Muay Thai specialist. He came in on his debut against everybody's favorite Jordan Leavitt, and he lost that first round and then rebounded impressively, was had great transitions, awesome scrambles. He's got, I wrote a decent striking, and that's probably being modest. I mean, it's fairly,
yeah,
it's fairly rudimentary, basic striking, which was still better than Jordan Leavitt's. Sorry, Monkey King. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, they're testing Grootsmacher again with a similar style matchup that Rafa Garcia gave him, except they expect the cardio to be there, which I do as well.
Also, the size differential. Oh, my word. Poyas. Yeah. I'm sorry. Wait, who again?
Listen, my man, Claudio Poyas. Tell these folks about the reach advantage. Tell them.
All right. So we got 2 inches of height. We got 4 inches of reach. Also, what was his name?
Claudio Poyas.
Okay. Anyways, the southpaw. So even with the rudimentary striking and, you know, but he's willing to just kind of like sit back into his kicks to the body. He really loves throwing kicks. And I think that he'll at least discourage Gritz from walking straight forward into him. And if he does, I think he'll be getting caught, clinched up, trapped, tripped, taken to the ground, taken down, single leg, double leg. It doesn't matter. Poyas got it covered here.
Poyas really loves to snatch those single legs, and he does it really well. And, yeah, I like Poyas here. So I guess so far that parlay would be Morono and Poyas.
Yeah, I mean, yo, come on, man. Poyas is minus 110. Can you stop talking about a parlay here?
Right.
Yeah, just play him straight up. All right,
I'm just upset that I missed him at plus 100, man. Shout out Die Hard and all the other savages that pulled the trigger on that one.
Yeah, I mean, my ultimate thought comes down to Rafa Garcia landing 5 out of 12 takedowns. And, yeah, ultimately, Grootsmacher, 60% takedown defense, so that's right on cue for his entire career of mediocre takedown defense. And when Garcia is completely gassed in the third round, he still lands 2 of 3. Like, what the fuck? Come on, Grits. Like, you're not better than that at that point. I mean, come on, man. Poyas is going to be landing takedowns all day on him.
Let's get to this, the people's main event, the bodybuilding competition. Thor versus the Hulk.
We got Atomic Alonzo Menifield versus William Nightmare Knight, also known as by Dantom Thick Willy.
I would really hate to steal one of their seats at the bar, man. Like, that is not what I want to do.
These guys
are terrifying.
I mean, when you see like William Knight doing some of his like Instagram videos of like lifting weights, it's absolutely captivating. I mean, the dude puts up more on the bar that like I've ever seen. It's just like he can really push it. 11-2 versus 10-2. You got Menifield's got a 2-inch height advantage, 3-inch reach advantage. Menifield's been the distance in the UFC. Knight has also been the distance, however, unsuccessfully. That fight against Dawn Jung, that one hurt. Talk about size differential. That was a really good example where all the strength in the world couldn't overcome like 10 inches of height disadvantage. And you know what I mean? Like,
come on, it was like 7, man.
Yeah, but it was really tough seeing like how much he was really giving up in that department. Now, Menifield, he can push a pace, but he also showed against Herman that when he gets caught with that check hook, all of a sudden he can start like being a little bit more on the defensive and fight to a decision, you know, using those leg kicks and really immobilizing. I just think like Ed Herman, like really, really not in the game at this point. So as Guru said to me earlier, Ed Herman in all caps, when I was talking about Alonzo Menifield going to decision in the UFC. Listen, this fight, we got Alonzo Menifield at minus 145 and William Knight plus 125. William Knight, that check left hook is going to be live all day. That's what he won with this in his last fight. Can he land it?
Yeah, I don't. I think he's going to land it over and over. I think the question you're asking is he going to land it and put his lights out? And it's a damn good question. I think it's a slop fight, and I tend to wonder, you know, what is the narrative, you know? And the line,
the narrative. Ooh, yeah. I think I know what the narrative might be. Leg kicks.
So what I'm thinking is like the narrative of leg kicks then tells me that these guys respect each other. They're not going to have some crazy brutality fest where the knockout's just going to come in that first round. They're going to take their time, try to show their skill set, and like we sometimes like to talk about, kind of set a pace.
Clinch fest.
How about we fade the narrative? Because I could, I mean, I guess I lean Menafield in terms of picking a person, a fighter, but why not fade the narrative and play Fight Goes the Distance at plus 140?
You know, I really think, you know, William Knight loves his wrestling, loves clinch. Menafield very much can play the clinch game. We saw Devin Clark control him there. We saw Devin Clark win a fight, essentially using the clinch as his best friend. I think Menafield has definitely shown the willingness to kind of, you know, let the fight get dictated by his opponent as far as how aggressive he's going to be. And yeah. So, I mean, listen, Menafield can definitely be cracked. But I think this definitely might be a specific fade the narrative fight. Like, oh, look at these two bodybuilders, these two powerful, whatever. Like, these guys have the potential to fight ugly and boring. So plus 140, you might as well take a chance.
I mean, they're saying at nearly minus 200 that the fight doesn't go the distance. So that's 2/3 of the time that there's a finish. Maybe 50-50 there's a finish, right? Like, so that's like a 15% margin of error, so to speak, within the line.
So just for their UFC careers specifically, we have 1, 2, 3, 4 out of their 6 wins are by finish. Mm-hmm. So that covers the 2/3, and their losses, 2/3 of their losses are by decision. So actually, it actually might be more helpful to look at how someone loses rather than how they win to determine what's going to happen to their future.
That should be good for our algorithm model thing that we're possibly working on over there.
Yeah, we'll have a little bit more of our own stats coming up for the pay-per-view. I wanted to work out a couple of things extra. But I think ultimately here, that might be the play for this fight. Guru, good call.
And it's a 30-second knockout. A double knockout. That's never happened before.
So let's get to our next fight here. We got Cheyenne, don't call me Baze, Vlismas versus Mallory Martin. Don't follow me home either.
Yeah, wow.
I'll follow you home, bitch.
What's her, Conejo? She's the best, man.
Yeah. Well, no, I mean, that's what Cheyenne was saying to Conejo. Anyways, yes, because she thought she spit in her face. Anyways.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'll follow you home. Yeah, that was on Twitter. That was great.
So they match up pretty well on paper here as far as height, reach go. Mallory Martin, I just don't think she's, like, super impressive in any way. I do think that the names that she's fought, like, you know, Janjiroba at least, like, you know, okay, that's a real tough grappler, but like she just gets put in these horrible positions. Like Pollyanna Viana subs her. I can't find myself trusting Mallory Martin. I mean, she gets knocked down and nearly knocked out by Hannah Cyphers, and she has to come back and rally back for rounds.
Yeah,
she was like, bro, why would I trust Mallory Martin at this point? The only problem is, like, Cheyenne is obviously has the outside the octagon stuff going on. I mean, JP, apparently there was some stuff going on. But anyways, I mean, realistically, as a fighter, like, Cheyenne needs to win this fight. Minus 200, that seems pretty reasonable. But Mallory's a veteran.
You kind of touched on all of everything that needed to be said in a lot of respects. So I'll chop it up a little bit differently. Mallory has been relatively underwhelming in her UFC career so far. She's lost twice by submission and one once by submission in a fight that she absolutely got 10-8'd in the round, first round, and came back after Hannah Cyphers was completely gassed and demoralized by the fact that she was unable to get the KO, and the fact that she was able to get Hannah Cyphers on her back, and Hannah's basically a turtle when she's on her, but she literally has no idea how to get up, and she was able to get the sub. With all of that being said, it is absolutely impossible to be on Cheyenne here. I'm really pulling for her in like in a personal aspect. I hope she's okay with everything. It stinks that we can't even break down her fight without mentioning it. How is this poor girl gonna feel going into it? I'm watching the lovely highlights from her fight. Throughout her fight, all you hear is her husband in her corner, almost over the announcers. Like the UFC marketed their relationship. Like this is a lot. This is a lot for any normal person to deal with.
Yeah.
And this sport specifically, if we haven't learned it, if other fighters haven't done enough interviews to tell you that if they don't have their personal shit together, it shows in the octagon. How many times do they say, oh, well, I didn't realize until years later I was fighting and I shouldn't have been. I think this is one of those spots. Unfortunately, I think she's out there to prove something. I think she, you know.
Oh God, there was something else too, man. Did you see she was just talking? I forgot she had tested positive for COVID and her last fight got postponed, and now she has a new opponent in Mallory Martin here on short notice. She was just saying last week that her symptoms weren't completely gone and she was hoping that they were cleared up in time for the fight, bro. Yeah. No. Mallory Martin probably needs to be just like a blind play at plus 160.
100%. And I honestly don't be surprised if you see her on the bet MMA sheet, because even at a half unit play, like I really, like I said, I'm pulling for this girl personally. I just, as a handicapper, these things, it's just too much, especially when stylistically they're going to the same place. They both want to get it to the ground. So yeah, maybe Cheyenne gets that snap wrestling takedown that she's looking for, but we've seen how scrappy Mallory is. We've seen her continue to scramble. She wants to be in jiu-jitsu. And I didn't get to say this. You gave the dig to Pollyanna Viana, and you're not the only one, because Polly got subbed by Veronica Macedo. But Pollyanna Viana is an extremely credentialed jiu-jitsu player, without a doubt. Virna Jandarovi is an extremely credentialed jiu-jitsu player. Cheyenne Baez is just a good wrestler. I'm sure she's got some decent jiu-jitsu credentials. I'm sure she could tap out my ass in 30 seconds, and I'd probably let her. But I don't think that this is a good spot. And with a line this wide, hell no. Give me the dog.
Sounds good. Next fight. Jake Matthews, the Celtic Kid, versus Jeremiah Wells.
Call him the boring kid.
Yeah, Jake Matthews, man. 61% defense.
That's what I'm saying. Like, respectfully boring. And you know what? And like, he'd probably say, like, good. Like, I don't want to get knocked the fuck out. Like, I'd rather
two
get
takedowns per 15, 40%.
He's solid. He's just solid. He's the kid that's been a prospect for the last 8 years.
Yeah. And you know what I mean? He has the 2-inch height advantage, but he's given up an inch of reach. And Jeremiah Wells, I mean, if there's anybody that could put a hurting on someone, it's Jeremiah Wells. So like, Jake Matthews is going to be on the defensive on the feet here. But Jeremiah Wells is also susceptible to being countered, to being, you know,
overly aggressive.
Yeah. And does he gas out if he's not able to, you know, so
definitely. Felder, his teammate, is even calling him out on it while he's calling his fight.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no way I would need Wells to be closer to like a plus two something if I was going to play him here, just because the experience of Matthews and who he's fought. I mean, I don't want to take a guy that Wells, I really think it's just a knockout or bust as far as his approach here. And with Matthews in minus 180, I don't love Matthews to the point where I would want to bet him minus 180 against anybody. But I don't want to be just like betting on a, you know, sitting here on a knockout. So I'd rather just, if you really feel that strongly about fading Jake Matthews' chin and that he's not just going to win with like grinding out top control. I just don't love relying on him for that. So, I mean, like, as far as like the two props, if you were going to like take those types of ways, I mean, Matthews' decision is plus 130. And then, I mean, if you want to say a submission because Wells gas is out from the top control, plus 650. I mean, that's not something that I would hate, but like he has 7 submission wins in his career, so it's not.
He didn't finish Diego Sanchez in the most insane fight you're ever going to watch. He didn't finish Emil Weber Meek. He didn't finish Rostam Akhman.
I just don't see him finishing Wells unless Wells finishes himself, essentially.
All right, so what you're saying to me is that you like this fight to go the distance, which would be plus money, right? Wouldn't that be fading the narrative here? Oh, well, they don't see that. Well, no, they see it's even money. Yeah, they see this fight even money at fight go the distance, but the under over set at 2.5 with the under 2.5 at plus 110. Which honestly surprises me because Wells is insane. Like, did you see like the way that he screamed after he knocked out Warley Alves? The look on his face, he was actually, to me, like when they showed it to him in the post the breakdown after the fight, like he was like upset like at how he looked. And the only thing I could understand from that is that he literally went full animalistic murder mode. And that's like the scream that you, like his crazy face, like that look.
Yeah.
It's just a primal animal. Like hit a switch flips. And this dude could flip. So I don't know, man. I almost kind of like, if I'm going to take something crazy, it's Wells by first round knockout at plus 700. Or maybe even round two at plus 1100, but like, yeah.
I don't have a touch. I'm not touching
probably,
this one.
That's what I was about to say. I'd probably circle Matthews and stay away. This is a
sounds
a
pop, good to
a,
me.
A pop and popcorn fight. Shout out Fight Night Picks.
11% defense for Wells in a small sample size. That's just how do you have 11% defense against anyone in any sample size, even in a fight that you win? Like, what the fuck? Like, how can you? Okay, so fuck that. Honestly, just fuck that. Next fight. And honestly, I don't know that I have much for you guys on this fight because it's a similarly sketchy type of situation for me. You got Manel Kopp versus Zhago Zhumagulov. Starboy Mr. Kopp over here is going to have a 1-inch height advantage, 2-inch reach advantage. But, I mean, he's not even outpacing Zhago Zhumagulov on total strikes. And it's not like Zhumagulov is, you know, the most prolific guy out there. And listen, I mean, Kopp's getting outlanded in his UFC career. Zhago Zhumagulov has shown that he has solid combos and he can go the distance and all this stuff. So like, I just don't know how you can possibly make this fight minus 265 Kopp and plus 215 Zhago Zhumagulov. It has sketchy split decision written all over it. This fight, and to me, I mean, this fight's going the distance minus 165. That makes total sense.
You'd like, that was interesting. I was wondering if this would be a fade the narrative spot with Kopp's submittability and or his ability to like maybe lose by submission. But you're right, because I mean Zhumagulov got the first sub of his career last fight in a standing guillotine against a guy 4 inches taller than him.
Yeah, bro. Jerome Rivera, just throw anything you saw against Jerome Rivera out the window. That's not a UFC caliber fighter.
That was a poor guy. That was literally really funny rewatching that. I mean, when you look back, though, look at his level of competition. Maybe he's getting outstruck, but he fought Matthias Nicolau, who we had one of our best bets on with again over Tim Elliott, and that proved to be worth it. And Alexander Pantoja, who's probably, I mean, right, the title challenger waiting in the wing again as they make a trilogy for Figueiredo and Moreno. So,
and then I just hate the output. 49 strikes in three rounds, 61 strikes in three rounds. I mean,
definitely super sketchy.
He and then once again lands 19 strikes in 4 minutes, 44 seconds. So he's on pace for another, but it's a crazy flying knee. And Osborne wasn't even really knocked out, like he was knocked down. And I give credit to the ref for calling the fight because, like, the optics of that, sure, but like, I will say, like, was it, you know, is that something, is that a type of way that you could see Shumagulov getting knocked out? A guy that has a career 60% striking defense?
I just think he's going to be really fast, man. When you look at who he's fought, Amir Albazi and Ravion Paiva, who are going to have to break down, I guess, is that next week already? Holy macaroni.
Yeah.
That's crazy. So we're going to have to break him down for Sugar Sean. Like, he doesn't really have that kind of power. Amir Albazi's like, isn't he more of like a, we haven't seen him. I was just thinking about how, yeah, exactly. That's how I remember him. He's a grappler. He has a key lock submission win. He's got a triangle choke over Malcolm Gordon. He's a good striker. That's why we liked him, because he's very well-rounded, but we haven't seen him since. Manel Kopp is going to be so much faster and have some power. I actually think I want to fade the narrative here. I think I want to go fight doesn't go the distance, or even Manel Kopp by finish.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, we have some dissent, because I was going to say, if anything, I would take Shumagulov small play on the money line.
Barring weight weigh-ins, because Manel Kopp literally missed weight versus Jerome Rivera.
Fair enough. Hey, against Ode Osborne. But yeah.
Oh my God. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. I looked it's at all the good. Thing. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
It's all good. But hey, I totally respect that. But I will say that Shumagulov, more than meets the eye, chronically underrated in my eyes. And
chronically.
And I think, it should be a closer fight than expected. I don't necessarily know that it's like a huge play, but that's where I'm at on that one. Next fight here, we got some solid nicknames, huh? We got Mackie Coconut Bombs Patolo versus Dusko Thunder Todorovic. Pretty solid. We got Todorovic has got a 3-inch height advantage, giving up 1 inch of reach. He's got like those alligator arms. And it's so sketchy when you look at how he relies on his like moving straight backwards and just leaning back with his head. And that really didn't work out so well against Puna Soriano once he realized if you throw more than one punch at a time that like you could just fuck his life up. So do you trust Mackie Patolo to unleash the coconut bombs?
You absolutely have to think he was going to. You know, it was kind of funny. I was just thinking to myself the other day, well, where is that guy, Mackie Patolo? Did they cut him and I didn't hear about it? And then, you know, here he comes up just this week to now fight. And he very well could find his way out of the UFC, unfortunately. And quite honestly, so could Dusko Todorovic. I know that Gregory Rodriguez is a beast, and honestly, Paulo Soriano kind of got the push right until he lost to another guy we're going to break down a little bit later, Brendan Allen. And I'm interested to see who Soriano fights next. He's fighting Maximov in February. That's a really interesting fight. This fight, I think that both of these guys, they have their backs up against the wall, and Mackie's taken pretty much all this year off to, I assume, get his shit together so he can fucking win his last, what I assume is his last fight on his contract. His last chance to get it done. So, and other than the narrative stuff, I think that at the end of the day, Mackie's just a more well-rounded mixed martial artist. I don't know that he's necessarily a better one. I just think he's a more well-rounded one. And I think that Todorovic's style with his hands down and just easy to hit, when you finish combinations, that's gonna be a problem. Like, the tape is out, the game plan is out. So,
I guess my the reason why I actually stay on the Todorovic side on this case -155. I think that he's really been at a physicality disadvantage in his last couple fights, and it was kind of a welcome to the UFC moment. Mackie Patolo had been cutting down to 170 for a bit and moved back up to 185. I don't know that he has the requisite physicality to bother Todorovic overall. And I do think that we've seen him have a better game plan against people that he could kind of bully in the clinch, land some body shots working in the clinch, controlling. And he wasn't able to do that against Gregory Rodriguez. And Gregory Rodriguez had the sharper boxing combos. We also saw him do that. It was also against Daquan Townsend. So it's like,
listen, you brought up the welterweight thing, man. The last time he fought at welterweight was on the Whitaker and Adesanya card. You know, they're booking that one for the rematch. So,
yeah, well, just overall size. I mean, Todorovic is going from fighting a guy that was like 6'3", 6'4", you know, Greg Rodriguez.
Right.
To fighting a guy that's 5'10", and used to be a weight class below. It's just,
that's a fair point.
Yeah. Like from when I saw Todorovic go to like work in the clinch or go for takedowns, he'd be turned out easily. And like, he couldn't do anything physically. Whereas against other opponents, I've seen him control them.
That's a really interesting point.
So that's why I don't want to like keep the last fight. I didn't want to take Rodriguez because he was on short notice, like replacement, but he seemed like a solid fighter. I don't think I can fade Dusko in this spot though. In fact, I'm going to take him. It's -155.
Wow. Yeah. Something's telling me, Mackie, but I'm definitely not doing anything until I see them face off. And if I really see that some thickness and some real size out of Dusko, I'll follow you.
Guru, Brian Barberena versus Darian Weeks. This is now kicking off our main card.
Why?
Let me be honest with you guys.
Why?
This fight was just put together. I did not get to tape Darian Weeks. Brian Barberena, still have a bitter taste in my mouth over Jason Witt, so I'm like super biased upon him right now. And I don't see how you can make Brian Barberena -142 favorite until you start looking at like the history for Darian Weeks and like, damn, like I can't, I'm sorry guys. Like this is one fight where I'm going to need a little bit more time this week if I'm even going to have a play on it, but I can't in good mind give you my analysis on something that this specific fight, it was like, I think it was yesterday or this morning where they announced that Barberena finally got another opponent after they lost Matt Brown.
Yeah. I don't know. I think at the end of the day that maybe from whatever little bit I saw that, you know, Darian Weeks is a decent prospect and, you know, maybe deserves to be in the UFC. I just think that even at this stage, Brian Barberena may still be too much of a mixed martial artist for him, like too well-rounded. And, you know, that's somebody has to win this fight, right? So, yeah, no, I agree. It's just kind of stay away. More research needs to be done.
Yeah. So, hey, guys, listen, if you made it this far, please make sure you give us a like, subscribe to our channel, give us a follow on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, all that stuff. Make sure you're getting those notifications for when we go live.
Set that reminder.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't miss out. And leave us some comments. Let us know what you think and who your best bet is. Don't be afraid to let us know.
Feel free to hit us up on any of our social media platforms as well. We'd answer any sort of questions or anything you might want to know.
Yeah. So our next fight on the main card, one that also got put together on a little bit of short notice, but definitely enough for us to do proper research on. We have Brendan Allen versus Chris Curtis. However, Brendan Allen -365 and Chris Curtis +280. It's like they haven't learned anything from recent events.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I feel like I'm in Groundhog Day again. We just lined a fight. We just broke down a fight last month with this guy, Chris Curtis, was making his UFC debut against a tough competition, a skilled guy. And we're like, oh, you know, maybe this, that, or the other thing. But the line is too wide. So let's make a play on Chris Curtis. We put him on our official play. And, you know, and again, it wasn't just a blind play, mind you. There was legitimate tape. There were skills. There were things that we saw in the matchup as well. And we thought that those things could be exploited. And they were. And I got to be honest, do we not, is it not that very similar situation?
Yeah, listen, Guru brought it up to me earlier in the week. Chris Curtis is in the UFC because Sean Strickland advocated for him. They're sparring buddies. Strickland's going to be in his corner, right? Is what you were telling me. And Chris Curtis is someone that is a veteran. He's not ever like out of it in there. You know, he's able to keep composed. I mean, listen, Phil Hawes hurt him a few times in that first round, but it was never to the point where he couldn't recover, get on his bike, circle around, get some distance. And then you know what? When he lands his counters, you feel it. You feel it, huh? And then he gets in the clinch, lands that knee. Everything just shuts down. I mean, that was electric. Still got the UFC 268 shirt on, you know, here. We're celebrating our visit still. And listen, Chris Curtis, I mean, Brendan Allen, his opponents land at 55%. He lands at 52%. That's not a good thing. He's not physically imposing with his striking. And he doesn't have a reach advantage, although he has a 4-inch height advantage. That's actually going to be detrimental when it comes to the grappling aspect here, because he's going to have to go down a little bit further to get there. And unless he's really relying on his trips and stuff like that, it might be a little bit more difficult to execute along the fence with the single and double legs, especially if you can even track Chris Curtis down with the footwork. Chris Curtis has shown, you know, the ability to stuff some takedowns, especially, you know, Phil Hawes didn't necessarily look like he was trying to execute them fully, but I think Brendan Allen has shown the ability in the past to gas out and also to get punched in the face. I think one of those two things is going to happen here. And I'm going to take Chris Curtis, crazy big underdog, plus 280.
Listen, I'm taking half my winnings that I had on Chris Curtis, and I'm putting it on him again. Let's do it.
Simple as that. Next fight. We got Jimmy the Brute Crute. I don't know how that's not his official nickname, but we're going with it. Versus Jamal Sweet Dreams Hill.
It is his official nickname.
It is? Okay.
According to Tapology.
Yeah, well, why the fuck don't they have it on UFC? Come on, guys. Bruce Buffer would definitely say it, right? Is that? Anywho, Jimmy Crute giving up 2 inches of height and 5 inches of reach. Not ideal. But the striking numbers, Jimmy Crute does look pretty solid, and he does have a bit more UFC experience than Jamal Hill. Hill does have him beat in the output, but overall, he is getting hit more than Jimmy Crute. So Jimmy Crute, where this fight really comes down to the difference, you see 5 takedowns, 80% accuracy, and 2 submissions attempted per 15 minutes. There's a clear path to victory here, and Guru, I'll let you get into some details here before I bring up a few other points.
Yeah, listen, I found myself a little bit back and forth until I kind of really solidified the fact that Jimmy Crute, man, he's kind of a savage. Like, he after getting his leg taken out from a man, he still landed the 2 takedowns. I think at the end of the day, all roads lead back to him in top control. And Jamal Hill is going to spend – Jamal Hill spends too much time being patient. He's a counter fighter, and he likes to stand at a distance and take his time. And Jimmy Crute's going to be all up in his shit, and he's not going to like it at all. He's going to get clinched up against the cage. And, you know, Jimmy Crute kind of had bitten off a little more than he could chew, because you saw that there was a path to victory for Jimmy Crute versus Anthony Smith. But Anthony Smith is a legend, man. That's like, that was Anthony Smith compared to Modestus Bukauskas, I mean, who should be in the UFC still, but is not. I mean, that's like 3 steps up in competition, because his fight with Johnny Walker got canceled, which he probably could have won that fight. Like, that's still an interesting fight to see. But still, Johnny Walker compared to Jamal Hill, it's apples and oranges.
So I guess there were a couple reasons why initially, like minus 180, I think I saw Crute at. Now it's minus 160. The line keeps on moving as money comes in on Jamal Hill. So the few things I was seeing on tape as I was studying this fight, Jimmy Crute, while he is very high level with his overall work rate on takedowns, it's more based on that brute strength and sheer will than pure technical ability. And you can see in his lack of top control at times where he's hunting for submissions or ground and pound, and he can definitely give up position. And I've seen Jamahal Hill definitely stand up and get back to his feet in the past. So I could definitely see a pathway for Jimmy tiring out, but in the same token, Jamahal Hill is way too willing to throw these like step in knees to the body, which is just going to open up the single leg all day. It's going to leave him off balance because he leaves his hands up in the air weird. Then when he's striking at times, his hands are low. And overall, don't trust Hill's, lack of like one punch knockout power to dissuade Crute from getting to the positions that he wants to be in. Also, seeing that Hill has lost a lot of friends, family members, also had a foot injury during camp, said something about like, you know, they asked like, you know, do you think, you know, that you might have thought about pulling out of the fight? And he's like, I have a family to feed or like something like that. And it's like, oh, all right. Yeah, I know he has a bunch of kids and like that's neither here nor there. I'm just saying on the fact that it didn't sound like a resounding like, no, like I'm fine. It was like, I have to take this fight. So like
he doesn't have a choice.
Right. Like, not the best vibes.
This is not Kamaru Usman sitting on the couch saying, yeah, I broke my hand 3 weeks before the fight. and I didn't even throw it until I was in the back. All right, Kamaru. Okay, buddy. Sure. Listen, whatever. This is a serious injury. This is a guy that needs the money, is taking a tough fight after taking a tough fight.
Guru, before you ask, I'm not doing Crute in over 1.5. I'm also not taking Crute inside the distance because on the chance that Hill just uses his survivability, I'm taking Jimmy Crute straight up -160 in the parlay.
I just was wondering, like, with the line written as it is, obviously some of these fights have to get a finish, right? But this fight, -350 not to go the distance, plus 240 it does go the distance, like that's so juicy.
What if Jimmy Crute takes like the Alexander Rokic approach and just lays on top of the Anthony Smith Jamahal Hill, you know what I mean? Like,
dude, listen, why not?
Yeah,
I guess because you would think that maybe Jamahal Hill can get a sub off his back, but
nah, because he can stand up, that's the thing, but like some clinch control stuff like that. But ultimately I do like that -160 and throw it together with Morono at -225.
What is Crute by decision, just for poops and giggles? +450 is not even strong enough. Anyway, moving right along.
Yeah, we got our featured fight on the main card here. Clay Guida versus Leonardo Santos. The Carpenter getting in there for, what is this, his 55th UFC fight? I mean, bad God. Not UFC fight, I'm sorry, 55th career MMA fight. MMA fights. And on that token, it's going to be his 32nd UFC fight. So still fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, good for Clay Guida, man.
Clay Guida is, of course, a fan favorite. Of course, one of my favorites. It's why, I mean, like I said, I kind of make this breakdown kind of simple here. It's kind of why I Santos is probably going to win. I just can't take him here. I'm not gonna take Clay either. Santos is gonna win because he's gonna be able to use his striking and keep Clay at kickboxing range.
Yes.
Like he's gonna precisely touch Clay up, and Clay's gonna be all bloody, and it's gonna be a
ball. He's 5 inches shorter and 5 inches less of reach from Clay Guida, and Leonardo Santos doesn't really get taken down by people. So what is the ultimate path to victory here?
The ultimate path to, listen, there. The other thing is, and this is why I'm not taking Santos. I'm not taking him. I'm going to be taking Clay. I will die on my shield with Clay here because Clay has the random off chance that Santos could gas out after one. Clay stays in his face the whole time, spams takedowns like a mofo, and maybe gets like a split decision with some top control and his crazy 30% accuracy with his striking. He's not going to win, but I'm not betting Santos because I can't do it.
I just don't like I mean, Santos is somehow 2 years older than Clay Guida.
They found the one guy in the UFC older than fucking Clay Guida to fight him. Like, come on.
Yeah, I mean,
this is a winnable fight. That's what I'm saying. And so, is Clay going to win? Probably not. But this is a winnable fight for Clay. So, I'm not going to do it to him. I can't. I can't do it to my dog.
All right. Well, let's get on to maybe where I have the best feeling of the day here.
Yeah,
we got Brad Quake Riddell versus Rafael Adamant Fiziev,
which has fight of the night written all over it.
All over it. These guys are former training partners out of Tiger Muay Thai. I mean, this fight is going to be fucking explosive. To keep it short and sweet for you guys, because honestly, there really isn't much else to say. I mean, the striking is going to be super even. Rafael Fiziev is going to gas out 8 minutes in.
Yep.
Brad Riddell is going to be turning it up 8 minutes in.
And then start to wrestle a little bit.
I mean, I think Brad Riddell could start wrestling at any point. We've seen him do it in every round. Now, Brad Riddell, 2 takedowns at 42%, and this guy's is a kickboxer. I mean, so Fiziev, a guy whose gas tank that you cannot trust, and Riddell, a guy who is probably just as good a striker as Fiziev, just not as, like, you know, held in as high as esteem, but his defense is better, and his accuracy is better, and his level of competition is right up there, too. And listen, he didn't get knocked out by Mustafayev like Fiziev did. So, ultimately, for me, we got Fiziev at, I'm sorry, we caught Riddell at plus 105. He's now moved to minus 105. So before he's completely even money, I would recommend getting out there and placing a bet on Brad Riddell.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I have a fairly sizable bet on Brad Riddell at plus 105, and I'm very happy about it. It's probably my favorite play of the week.
I mean, the one way I think Riddell loses this fight is a left hook.
Flash knockout,
yeah. Yeah, but his chin is just his chin and recoverability and cardio have just proven to me that I can feel comfortable not thinking he'll get flash knocked out. Right? I
agree. I think this is a freaking close fight. I think it's going to be a war. I think, like the line says, right, I think it's going to go the distance. I mean, even at minus 190 for going the distance is almost parlayable to me. If you
feel
strongly about its side.
Yeah, I especially for guys that have trained together, stuff like that. You know, maybe some of the heat's taking off some of their strikes. Maybe they know what's coming back their way. Maybe they're a little bit more prepared for it because of that. I could definitely see a go the distance type of idea. And minus 190 for this type of matchup, I feel very comfortable with this high level of guys that have shown that they can go the distance for us.
Yeah, I agree.
Fair enough. Hey, main event time. Ladies and gentlemen, Rob Font, Jose Aldo.
Your bantamweight title eliminator, right?
It seems like it. We got 4 versus 5. Sanhagen, you know, he's lost a couple, you know, Dillashaw, he's hurt. If Rob Font wins, he gets a title shot. I think if Jose Aldo wins, he needs one more.
They're not doing Jose Aldo like that.
Sure. They'll do whoever they want, however
they
want.
Yeah, come on. Dude.
What, they're going to throw him back in there against Jan without another win?
No.
Yeah, you get what I'm saying now, right? Because we remember what happened last time Jose Aldo fought Jan, right?
All right. So this is
Wait,
this is how it works. All right. If Font wins, he has to fight Sanhagen. But if Aldo wins, he has to fight TJ because Aldo versus TJ is a crazy fight.
Well, yeah. I mean, we would love that. That would be great. Yeah. I would take that. That'd be cool. Anyways, how about this fight? We got Rob Font and Jose Aldo.
How about reality?
Yeah. This fight has been sketching me out all week.
That's what I was about to say. I don't want to talk about the reality of this fight because it's been making me fucking nauseous all week. Like I can't take it. If it was any other fighter but Jose Aldo, I think we're on Rob Font hardcore. Like if it's Jose Jaldo, we're on Rob Font here. But it's Jose freaking Aldo, man. And yeah. you can't get past the lore. I can't get past the freaking number. I got a big bet on him at 138 plus 138, man. That line has slid a little bit and then was sliding a little bit more and then got brought back up. So I think it's sitting comfortably at plus. No, I got it at plus 134. I think it's sitting comfortably at plus 126 right now. So I'd like to see that line, you know, continue to slide. But I don't know.
There's
so much to say. There's so much to say about this fight. Jose Aldo is a guy that when you start to break down his wins and losses, his last two wins against Pedro Munhoz and Marlon Vera, he looked revitalized, man. This weight cut, this weight class, it's all looking well for him. The problem is when you just look a little bit further, man, there's always two sides to the coin with Aldo. You look at his losses, the last four times he's been scheduled to go five rounds, pretty much any time he's been scheduled to go five rounds in the UFC was a finish. He never made it there. Bro, he's never made it there, and he's never won it. He's never won a five-round fight. He hasn't run a five-round fight in the UFC since 2014, UFC 179 versus Chad Mendez, the rematch. Like, he then goes on to lose a five-round fight versus Conor McGregor in 13 seconds, two five-round fights to Max Holloway in round three, the five-round fight disaster loss to Peter Yan that should have been ended two rounds sooner. Like, those were bad looks. And then there's the other side of that coin, which is he's only lost to these elite guys. Elite, Peter Yan, Alexander Volkanovski, Max Holloway, Conor McGregor. I'm not putting Marlon Moraes in there because I don't think he lost that fight.
Yeah, I will say if you want to start breaking down resumes, the first thing that stands out to me about Rob Font on his recent run is facing guys that had early success and gassed out against him. Ricky Simone landed three or four takedowns in the first round, won the first round, nearly landed a knockdown, instead turned it into a takedown, and goes on for 2 minutes of control, three total takedowns in the first round, wins the first round, gasses out, loses the next two rounds. He goes 3 of 12 on his ensuing takedowns in the last two rounds, and it's just garbage for him. Font is able to technical him way to a decision. Then in his next fight, Marlon Moraes gets taken down twice, and then all of a sudden Moraes death gasses and gets jabbed in the face and decides to just get knocked out. Wait a second.
You're telling me that Marlon Moraes gassed out and then got knocked out?
By a jab. Yeah.
What? That's crazy.
I know. Unbelievable, right? So then you face Cody Garbrandt, coming off of the long COVID exposure, then all this other shit, low volume Cody Garbrandt, who hasn't been the same since God knows when, who was honestly not even like, anyways, Cody Garbrandt comes out there and in the first round lands 2 out of 3 takedowns for a minute of control. And the striking from distance wasn't going great, but I don't think Font necessarily built up the same type of momentum that round where it was like 100% his compared to the other four rounds. So you saw on a couple scorecards, on one scorecard, you know, Derek Cleary decided, hey, I'm going to give Cody Garbrandt that round. And like, you could argue it. So like, yeah, a little early success.
He gave him two rounds.
Yeah, he did. That was super sketchy, to be honest with you. So listen, Rob Font, that's great. I know we've seen, he's gone five rounds. You know, we've seen him do it recently, blah, blah, blah. It's like Cody Garbrandt gassed the fuck out and looked fucking terrible past round one.
That's the point I want to call back to is the Rafa Garcia fight, right? You talk about Rafa Garcia and you thought that he was going to look so good in that second fight because even though he lost to Nasrat Haqparast, right? He was throwing heat. And then he gasses against in that last fight, right? Because when you're taking damage, it makes it much more difficult, man. Versus Chris Grootsmacher. When Chris Grootsmacher is striking the shit out of him, hitting him to the body, when you're taking shots, your cardio is fucking different. Rob Font looked like Max Holloway because he's facing no fucking offense. That's how he's able to pick up his pace and throw 70 strikes in the third, fourth, and fifth round.
So ultimately, the reason why I'm on Jose Aldo,
he's a goat.
No, is because I made this point earlier on the week on my Twitter at TV Scouting MMA, was that both Rob Font and Jose Aldo have used their size to their advantage at the 135 division. That's no longer the case here as they match up against each other. It's like a 1-inch advantage at both for Rob Font, but realistically, a 1-inch advantage anywhere, you know. That's not doing much for you. But Jose Aldo has just proven technically to just keep improving with age. Those shots to the body, the leg kicks are coming back as he gets further away from that foot injury that he had forever ago. Rob Font's very open to the leg kicks. His striking defense is good on paper, but he still absorbs the same amount of strikes that Jose Aldo does. Overall, so I just think that this fight, while it could be close, I do think Aldo is going to be landing the more impactful strikes, and I don't trust Font to hold up. If Aldo decides, you know, that he is going to wrestle here, I think he will have a lot of success, but I still do think that he wins the stand-up exchanges.
I think the fight goes the distance, so I think maybe that's just like if you're not super comfortable in a side. I think that might be the best way to play it. I think if there is a finish, it's on the Rob Font side. So if you really like Rob Font, I think the best play to play Rob Font is Rob Font round 4-5 decision. But I like Aldo. And one thing I'm seeing, which is really weird, FanDuel has how will the fight end? For it to end by points is minus 165. But round props over, oh no, wait, that makes sense. That's stupid. It's only minus 152. Yeah. So that's what I'm saying. So I honestly, I like the over 4.5 at minus 152. Take the 10 cents off, 15 cents off.
Listen, ultimately, thank you guys for making it this far. Just as like a token of appreciation, to just go over our favorite plays real quick, short and sweet. Alex Morono parlayed with Jimmy Crute. Looks pretty good. And as straight plays, Brad Riddell, I'll take that all day. And maybe we'll have a couple other underdogs thrown in on there with like Claudio Pueyas. So keep an eye peeled for our Bet MMA tips, guys.
Listen, thanks so much for listening. And make sure you tune in next week for UFC 269. Dustin Poirier versus, I almost said Conor McGregor, versus Charles Oliveira for the lightweight belt. I really can't wait for that one. That's going to be sick. So thanks for tuning in, everybody. Make sure you send it around. Please, for the love of Jehovah, check in with our Bet MMA page. It's super, super important. Thanks so much.